It wouldn't surprise me that Dave appeared. I've been quite blessed when Dave talked. And just another little tangent on that, one of the blessings that I've received from being a part of this group and going to the Trinity Church's church was meeting my brother Dave. Several of our circles and groups we've been in, it just seems like the Spirit has worked with us many times where it seems like I don't really understand it, but there's something that I just feel a connection with him. So when he actually walked up tonight, it was very appropriate. I feel very much his support. What I want to talk about tonight kind of is, I was here, I don't know, several months ago and talked about kind of a little bit of my experience, my introduction to this church and my experience with it, and really the importance of our perception and how God affects how we live our lives. And it must be a topic I like, because as I was putting the topic together tonight, Dave, look, give a familiar picture before you sit down. When I was putting the topic together tonight, it really started coming to me to do a little bit more on looking at our perception and how we apply that to our lives. And kind of a statement that I think is about as basic as I can get when I work with people in my own life and as I move forward is how we perceive things and what we believe is possible directly leads our lives. How we perceive things and what we think is possible really directly leads our lives. A very simple illustration of that is, we can all see that what I'm finding right now is some pretty normal goats.
Very normal. And again,
I'm a psychologist, so I'm not sure what normal means anymore. But these are normal goats. And you see, I have a small goat, kind of relatively small, and a medium rope, and a long rope. And we perceive these ropes as being very, very similar. And the makeup of the lengths are quite different. And for all of us that believe that things are as they appear to be, you'll be quite surprised when you see these ropes aren't actually three separate size ropes. But if this works right, you'll see that they're really three identical ropes. And they're all pretty much the same now. The makeup's the same, and three ropes that are pretty much the same right now. And so, the statement I start with is how we perceive things and what we believe is possible really directly influences and leads our lives. And if we believe this is possible, is it possible? Well, we can pretend, or is it really something that is really possible? I'm really kind of messing with you tonight, because this is a trick. And, for those that, want to see, we've really got the three, different size ropes here. And so, how is it that we kind of get ourselves thinking that things can only be looked at one way, they can only be done one way, and when there's a twist to it, it shocks us. Like, now wait a minute, that's not the way it's supposed to be. And this is kind of what parallel when we talked last time. That's not the way it's supposed to be. And so we really strive to understand how it's supposed to be. And so right now, there's several of you that don't know how the trick is done. Some of you in the room probably do. But for those of you who don't, there's this uncomfortableness right now. Because I want to know. I want to know how it's done. And if I were to show you how it was done, then you'd be able to sit back in your chairs again and relax and go to sleep for the rest of the talk. But if I keep you on the edge of your chair, it's like, maybe, So let me show you. I think that might be cool. The three ropes, as you can see, the small rope, the medium rope, and the long rope. Nothing really happens really different to them, except if I do it right now. That's the trick when you do it. So it's really the way you pull them up. You pull the ropes up, but then when you pull them down, basically what happens is the little rope is tied off on top. So your little rope and your long rope really becomes two medium ropes. You got it? So now it's okay. Oh good. Now it makes sense. Now it makes sense. I can relax. But that little point is going to kind of stick with us through the night. Is the way we look at things really kind of, we're used to looking at things a certain way. Kurt, open your hand up to the first page here. These kind of illusions that we look at. And our mind tries to make sense out of these. Okay, our mind takes the data, the stuff that kind of comes into us, and we try to make sense of it. Now, granted, when I photocopied this, it's not quite as bold as the original. So the first one may not work that well. It might work for some of you. But if you look right at that first picture here, you look right in the middle, those little white dots in the peripheral might kind of start getting gray or black or white or blinking a little bit. Does that work for anybody? I know it didn't really work for me so well. It does for you, Dennis? So as you look at that, you can see kind of the little white dots kind of filling in and turning white again. And they kind of flicker a little bit. Does that work for anybody else? I guess Dennis is the only one that's working for here. If you saw the original, it worked really well. But these others, if you kind of makes the point. But that a stick right below there, below that picture. How many are there? One or two, the little stick right there. How many are there? Yeah, it keeps going back and forth. And your mind's going to go crazy if you're looking at it because you're trying to make sense of it. You're trying to make sense of that data that's coming in. The one right below that, that geometric shape, if you look at line AB and line BC, which one's longer? Yeah, it looks like, you know it's a trick, so you're going to say they're the same. And they really are the same. But when you look at it, you think, well, AB, of course AB is longer. But if you kind of get a string or folded or whatever, you see they're actually the same length. Amazing. AB and BC. Same. Let's look at the one here of these lines here. Again, you know that it's supposed to be a trick, so you're going to answer opposite what you see. But do you think those up and down lines are parallel or not? They don't look like it, but they are. Yeah, your eyes are playing tricks on you. In fact, if you want to go for sure, you can kind of look at it this way, and you'll see. So you're just going to hold the paper out and look at it that way. And you can see they're parallel. So when you look at it this way, all of a sudden it throws you off. Mm-hmm. You see that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the last one. When you look straight down on it, and the last one looks like maybe a Lego block or something, how many see that there's kind of three kind of bubbled out and one kind of bubbled in, and then the one to the side is bubbled out? Okay, now I want you to look at it and turn the paper 180 degrees, and what happens?
Oh,
yeah, you got the bubbles down and only one bubbled up, and the one by itself is bubbled down. Then turn it right side up again, see what happens. Yeah, it's a shadow. Our mind is used to looking at things in a certain way, and we're used to seeing, okay, when the shadows are down, it must be bubbled up, and then so the one that looks bubbled down, the shadow's on the top side. And so we're just, that's the way we're kind of trained to look at things. Now, before we were trained to look at it that way, we'd just probably just see shadows in mind. For some reason, with our maturity and figuring out the world, we've come to organize it that way. Go back now to the front page, the cover. What do you see?
A box of crayons.
A box of crayons. This is going to reveal more about me tonight than I want to. Usually adults see an intimate couple in there. Very young children who haven't been trained to see that yet, what do you think they see?
Dolphins.
Nine dolphins. How many, okay, this is going to be a good question. How many people do not see nine dolphins? Uh-oh, look around. Okay, this is going to... Okay, help each other out. Help see the dolphin. You see the dolphin, Charlie? Uh-oh.
Millie doesn't see the dolphin.
Good heavens. Dolphins, you say? Crayon. So we really do, we learn how to see things. go to the page with the solar system for a second. Mm-hmm. When you look into the heavens, if you stand out, you go out into the night sky out here, and you stand and look at the heavens, what do you see? Crayons, I know. The answer is space. Okay, let me try this again. When you go outside and you stare into the heavens, what do you see? Oh, you guys are good. You guys are making this difficult here. You see space.
You see space. And kind of scattered in space, what do you see, Dennis?
There you go, stars, right. Right, and so you see the solar system, and we see, okay, there's the sun, yeah, there's the moon, there's all these planets. And basically we have this perception when we look into space, we see nothingness, we hear stories of astronauts going up there, and just that sense of being in space is an experience that's very hard to even describe, what it's like to have nothingness. But yet we have a sense of it when we look into heaven, with something scattered here or there on a clear night without smoke. But yet, when we look down in front of us at the pew, at the desk, at our clothes, what do we see? We see solid matter. We see solid matter. But actually, if you break it down and you look at the picture below the solar system, you see an atom. There's actually more space within the atom than there is between the sun and the planet. And so we've learned that when we look into the heavens, we expect to see space, and what do we see? Space. When we look down at something solid that actually has more space in it than it does up there, what do we see? We see something solid. Why is that? Let's think about that for a second. Look at the nucleus. If we were to take the atoms, and again, I don't have the exact figures. It probably bore us if they had the numbers. But if we took the atom, and we took the nucleus of it, and we took the proton and the neutron, and we took it and we stuck it in the middle of Qualcomm Stadium. And we said that in each of us, we'd be about the size of, a ping pong ball. Okay? And then you go out to the very perimeter of the building, out in the parking lot. That would be where the electrons would be. Okay? And the size of the electron, if in the middle of the stadium was the ping pong ball, the size of the electrons would be about the size of a piece of dust. Okay? That's an atom. The atom is kind of generally one of the smallest kind of building blocks we have, and the size of the atom itself is 1 millionth smaller than the thickness of your hair. So you take something that small, 1 millionth smaller than the size of your hair, you stick the middle of it, the size of a ping pong ball, inside Qualcomm, you take the electrons, the size of dust, out in the parking lot, and there's all that space. And then those things grouped together make something solid. We learn to see what we expect to see. Why is it that we don't see that solidness when we look into space and we see space? Well, it's like the magic trick again. It's like, okay, well, give me an answer. You know, how do you do it? How does that work? What's behind that? What's that? I don't know if it's really a should. It's just kind of what we do. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to do with basically what we expect to see and how we learn to perceive and how we basically then incorporate that in life. It's interesting the kind of the serendipity of how circumstances work together. Last night I was listening to the radio on Togo and the night station, whatever it is, that what's the guy's name that talks late at night, it's a pair of metaphysical stuff. Oh, yeah, that station. And it was actually talking about when babies are born, they're naturally not afraid of water. In fact, anybody listen to the radio last night on our station? Anyway, if a baby was born underwater, he naturally has the instinct to swim to the surface like a dolphin and get air from the surface. There's that natural instinct that babies have to swim. But yet something happens. Babies kind of spend the first 2 years of their life whenever they kind of wander by the pool. What do parents say?
Get back!
No! Oh no, babies by the water, pull them back, put fences around pools. And so for the first couple of years of baby's life, they learn that water is fear. They learn water is dangerous. They learn that water is something that they have to stay away from. It's annihilation if they go close to it. And so that natural instinct they have, that water is actually something pretty good.
Thank you. That water is something they have, that natural ability to go into and swim. They've learned that it's annihilation to get close to it.
And so then what happens when baby turns to be 5, 6 years old and mommy and daddy want to teach baby to swim? And they go out and buy a bathing suit. And they tell Buddy to get in the water, what's Baby going to do at 5 years old? Scream, yell, kick. There's no way on earth he's going to do it. Why? He's got the natural instinct to swim.
He learned. His behavior was learned. Something that was natural was reinforced not to do it, and then not going to the water to the baby was as natural as going into the water before he was learning it. There was it. One more quick experiment I want to share with you. Rats. This experiment that was done with, you take these rats and you put them in this, like, this little maze. The thing with the maze is you paint all the walls with horizontal lines. Okay, so it's a white maze and all the walls are painted with horizontal lines. And for the first several months of this little baby rat, that's all he sees, he grows up, he learns the maze with horizontal lines, he learns his way around, knows where the cheese is. The thing is, the cheese has little horizontal lines painted on it too. Everything he sees has horizontal lines. Well, at 6 months, baby's mature, little rat, and so they put him in an identical maze, except this time, the lines are vertical, straight up and down. The rat who knows the maze, he's been in it for 6 months, he knows his way around perfectly. You put the maze in an identical maze, except you change the direction of the lines, the rat has psychotic behaviors. He's running at the walls, he can't find his way around. An identical maze, the difference is he learned this is the way it's supposed to be. All of a sudden you say, no, this is the way it is. He doesn't know how to react. He doesn't know how to find his way around. So basically, let me go back to my beginning statement. How we perceive things and what we believe is possible directs our lives. Our brain receives about 400 billion. Now, I know these figures are going to be hard to figure out. That's like, what, four groups of zeros? 400, it's a big number, 400 billion bits of information a second. Okay, so right now, 1 second, 1 10,000. 400 billion bits of information just got inputted in your brain in that 1 second. We're able to process, okay, 400 billion we get, 400 billion we get, we're able to process 2,000 bits of information a second we can process. We get 400 billion bits of information a second that come into us through our senses, through our nose, through our ears, through our skin, through our autonomic nervous system, everything. That 400 billion, we process 2,000 bits of information a second. There are approximately 100,000 chemical reactions in our brain per second. The neurons are the little cells in our brain that make where all the information is stored. There are about 10, and I don't even know how to explain this number, 10 to the 800th, that means you take a 1 with 800 zeros past it, possible connections that our neurons can make in our brain. That's 1,400 times more complicated than the entire world's phone system. Okay, so in our brain, it's 1,400 times more complicated than the entire globe's phone system. So if you think about 400 billion bits of information per second, we can process 200,000. What happens to the rest of that? It's there. What this tells me, okay, and we talked about how our behaviors learned, we talked about how all this stuff's coming in. Basically, there's 400 billion, and we process 2,000. That leaves room for a little bit of choice of what it is that we want to take in, of how we want to perceive the world. We've already seen tonight that the way we've been trained, even without us knowing it, that kind of already directs how our lives are, the way we perceive water. If the baby learned from day one that water is wonderful, he probably wouldn't freak out at 5 years old.
the way that we've learned to translate, to bring in that 400 billion pieces of information, the way that whether we've chosen, our society's chosen, our churches have chosen, our government has chosen, our community's chosen, the way that we've somehow globally chosen to take that information has kind of set up a structure of how we perceive, how we act, how we perceive what's possible, and how we perceive the world. And so, to me, with so much information, there really does leave room for choice in how we choose to see the world and how we choose to react to it. I want to read to you a quote, and it's fairly long, and I don't generally like reading too much, but I do want to share this with you because it really has a lot to do with recognizing the vastness of our brains and this choice that we have the ability to make if we can just slow down long enough to recognize that we can make a choice of how we want to perceive and how we want to act. This quote is from Nelson Mandela from his inauguration speech. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It is not just in some of us. It is in everyone. As we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. That does deserve a clap. That was from Nelson Mandela. It's powerful. But yet, for whatever reason, most of us choose to be small. Most of us choose to let our little light shine, Hide it under a bushel, We let a little light shine, but why not let the whole flame shine? It's in us. It's in every one of us. But yet, for some reason, we've chosen, for whatever reason, to let our little light shine. Why limit ourselves? Why limit ourselves to 200,000, 2,000, when there's 400 million, billion pieces in us? Why are we choosing the small pieces? Why are we limiting ourselves? What limits us? The whole piece of how we see ourselves, what we believe is possible, I said earlier, the first things I've said basically is that how we perceive things and what we believe is possible directly directs our lives. As a psychologist, I work a lot with people's belief system, how their belief system directly limits them. When they believe something negative is going to happen, the results will be negative. There's cognitive therapy. There's one of the most simple little tools we use is ABC, basically. The activating event, the belief system, and then the consequence. Most people don't really pay attention to that B in the middle, the belief system. Most people say, okay, here's the trigger, the activating event, the A, and they jump immediately to the consequence. He said something mean to me. I punch him out. The activating event. They looked at me funny. I get my feelings hurt. They're late. They don't care for me. You get the picture? There's something that happens, and we immediately jump to the consequence. So you look at me funny, you hate me. It's kind of like in football when they have a instant replay. They kind of slow it down and they look at really kind of what happened. That's what we need to do with our belief system. Is between the activating event and the consequence, somehow we need to slow down and look at that B, the belief system, of what happens between the trigger, the event, and the consequence. How do we process that? How do we believe it? Just the other day I had a patient that left a message for me at, it was like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And he said, something was happening, he wanted me to call him back. And then at 5 o'clock he left another message, well, I guess you don't care for me, I'm going to quit. Well, I left work at 3 o'clock, and I didn't hear my messages until the next day. So my answering machine is basically getting, you know, his anger. And so I come in this morning, and I hear my messages, and the 4 o'clock message is, I need you to call me. Then 2 seconds later, there's a 5 o'clock message that I'm going to quit, the world's terrible, you're the worst therapist in the world. And, you know, and there's this jump from the 4 o'clock message, 5 o'clock message, and I didn't hear any of them until the next day. Well, in his mind, within that hour, he already concluded that there's no reason for him to continue to live because the world's awful, his therapist is awful, and this was his what happened to him within that 1 hour mark. What we choose to believe is really up to us. We look at our lives and we see the directions our life's going. A lot of us are happy with a lot of those pieces, and a lot of us are not happy with a lot of those pieces. With the options, with the availability, with all of that information coming in, it really is a choice that we make, how we want to process that, and what we choose to believe, and how we want to believe it, and how we want to manifest it. We choose to believe what we see as possible. When I deal with my schizophrenic patients, it's really interesting because they hear things that other people don't hear, and they see things that other people don't see, and the medical world chooses to call them as sick and chemically imbalanced and pathological. And in our society, we really do have a hard time functioning because they are seeing and hearing things the rest of us don't see. But it's interesting, if you take those people and you do a scan on them and you look at their brain activity, if you can measure the activity of their brain when someone was in the room actually talking to them, there's a certain area of the brain that lights up. So that's the active part of the brain. And that part of the brain lights up when people, I mean, not physically lights up, but you can see the activity there. The computer lights up. That part of the brain, the computer lights up when you can hear words. Well, it's interesting, when you have a schizophrenic patient hearing voices, that part of the brain lights up. And they are actually experiencing as if there is someone in the room is really talking. And so to try to tell that person, no, there's no one there talking. Their brain is telling them that it is. For them, there's no difference between a person actually talking or their brain telling them it's talking because that is their experience. I don't want to compare any of us to pathological schizophrenic patients, but the point is how we choose to perceive the world makes a tremendous effect on how we actually experience the world. You can look at your friends and you can think that they're slighting you, and that will be your experience. You can look at your friends and you can think how wonderful it is that you have so many blessed people in your life. That's what your experience is going to be. Both can be reality. But what you do with it is going to make your own reality. So how is it that we limit ourselves? And this is what kind of brings me back to my experience, and this is what I'm going to conclude on. It brings me back to my experience here with this church and words that I think are probably as precious and as valuable that you'll ever hear anybody say. They're words I hear repeatedly from Millie when very lovingly she says, "Watch your thoughts." How's that go? Our words, our thoughts, and our actions do create our reality. If we have 400 billion bits of information coming into us, we can choose the ones that we want to focus on. And when we watch our words and our thoughts and our actions, we do create our reality. So our futures, our existence, our happiness, really is in our hands. And that's really what I wanted to highlight tonight, is just kind of as we look into space, we see space. When we look into the solidness, we see solidness. And it's all okay. It all works. But recognize that we're right in the middle of that, and we can choose how we want to manifest God through our lives. Thank you.